probation, the sequence of transfer of information, both about the necessity and the request for services, and the medical indicators for and against meeting this standard as indicated in the bill. There are several other issues that came to the fore as well, in terms of transparency in the office, but also awareness of the role of the Board of Dentistry, if there were concerns, and how that may or may not have been met. So there was a break, so we decided to retain the bill for purposes of having a further discussion and seeing what, if anything, about this bill, or whether it could be modified in a way that would be beneficial and still meet what we would need for medical and dental standards. Having said that, I'll open to any of your committee members who have comments. Yes, Representative Marsh.
My understanding was that when we left this, there was some possibility that the issues about this were going to get resolved in the licensing boards before we were going to discuss it again. So I would like to hear an update as to whether that in fact happened.
Yeah, that was my understanding. There was no Board of Dentistry here at the time. So, Representative Sauer.
I have been doing my research in explaining a number of issues about this. I have numbers of concerns. One concern is the issue of civil liability. If a supervising dentist makes a clinical decision and that decision is in error, it would seem that he or she is then liable for civil suit. If, however, a patient demands a procedure which a clinician says is inappropriate, who then bears the civil liability if things go wrong? And I think that's a very serious concern with this legislation. The second issue that is of concern is that very often a supervising clinician will identify risk factors for a patient in any number of cases. It could be something as arcane as hand surgery, who is to say, in which the...
You should say that.
In which the patient simply doesn't have the expertise to make that determination. In this case, we could be looking at a potential dental abscess. That abscess could be, let us say, in an upper tooth with potential access to the sinuses. We could be looking at a tissue that is suspect, that could be a tumor, and a disturbance of the soft tissues that occurs around prophylaxis might disturb another diagnosis that would put the patient at grave risk. So you now have several concerns with this bill. And finally, in case any of you wondered if I would ever be done, this bill places the legislature in between a professional practitioner and a patient. And I don't think that's a place where legislation is the appropriate solution to a problem. Thank you for being patient with me.
Representative Freitas.
I would just add that was my first impression in reading this bill, was that you really want to be here, legislature? This is a very tricky place. Decisions are made for an infinite number of reasons, and theoretically, the person who's fully trained and accredited, et cetera, has the best chance of making the best decision. So deferring to the patient, that's more of a salesman kind of process. You know, why can't the dentist at that point say, but I know you need the prophylaxis, that's fine, but I can't do it right now, because it might interrupt something that I'm gonna do, which will make you worse. So, and I don't know if every dentist would respond that way, but it certainly puts me in the same situation you're in, saying, this is pretty risky, this is a risky approach.
Representative Marsh.
I wanted to expand on what Representative Soloway said. My concern when we heard this bill originally was that it could end up requiring people doing the prophylaxis basically to commit malpractice. The example would be someone who has a heart condition, that they are required to take prophylactic antibiotics before dental procedures. They fail to do so, it would be entirely appropriate to refuse to do the dental prophylaxis because the person could get endocarditis and die. To perform the procedure without that and risk of that, then if it happens, it becomes malpractice. We cannot require in statute for somebody to commit malpractice. That's just nuts.
Sorry for the height, my handwriting got a little sore. I would agree with many of the points made, and I tried to sort of refocus just exactly how this might transpire in the office setting and how some of this might be obviated, but also how it might be exacerbated, the problem exacerbated. And it seems to me it centers around communication. So what I did was walk myself through a patient called the office. Now, it's either an old patient or a new patient. If it's an old patient and they've been in the office, then there's a medical record available, and the person says, I'd like a prophylaxis. And then it would be a situation where my sense would be someone would look at that record and say, oh, okay, you had healthy teeth, that's okay, you're not quite due for it, but you're going to be out of town, so we'll move it up. Okay? So they come in, and at that point, then the decision would be, oh, but did you realize you have an abscess? Well, I'm going to be out of town, and it's not bothering me. I want the prophylaxis. Okay. So, given this, if this were to be in place, then that decision would be obviated. If it's a new patient calling and have no idea, what kind of communication? I just want a prophylaxis. Is they say, oh well, okay, come on in. Or is there a measure of information? Well, our office policy is that, in fact, you arrive at our office, we will do an exam. If your oral hygiene is such that it can tolerate this, then we will proceed. Or what kind of communication occurs? And again, going back to that key word, communication. Having said all of that, several issues, and I think Representative Marsh raised the issue of the liability. If there, if say this is performed and something occurs, where does the liability arise? I still think that, or I guess it was Representative Sullivan, liability still resides with the practitioner, not trust me, I've been in situations or reviewed situations that have been similar situations, and the practitioner is still liable. So that raises another standard. All of that said, I think two things. One, from my perspective, this does address an issue, but this is the wrong way to address it. Ability of the patient to receive services should definitely be recognized, but I think the higher standard is for the office, the practitioners, to communicate what is there's the standard that is going to be met for them to provide that. And I guess from our perspective, it wasn't clear that how that actually occurs, and that's something that has to be developed through the Dental Society in terms of if you're going to be doing this kind of this is what you need to communicate.
And I'm happy to speak to that if you'd like me to. I feel like I'm going to work that.
And the second, I'll finish and then I'll ask for other comments. And the second is
is, what is the role of the Board of Dentistry? Is there anybody here from the Board of Dentistry today? Still none. I will stop at that point and just ask, does anybody have other questions at the moment? We'll get back. Anybody in the audience care to add to what we've already mentioned? Yes, please identify yourself.
Yes, my name is Michael Lauer, back on the Executive Director of the New Hampshire Dental Society. And first and foremost, thank you for your thoughtful comments on this subject. It's a very important subject, the patient-dentist relationship. We have been working with Representative Judy, and I think this actually exists in two planes. First is from personal experience from Representative Judy, as well as his broader implications for seeking the legislative avenue. As you already said, you've already spoken to the legislative side of this. We have been in contact with the Board of Dental Examiners. We have urged them to invite Representative Judy. I believe he's going to be invited to the next board meeting in October to speak about his personal experience, if he felt there was an issue with the particular dentist that he had this incident with. But overall, we're very grateful to you for your thoughtful comments, and we're here to help out in any way we can. We've spoken about our issues with the patient safety issues, so I will keep it from there.
You had a question or a comment as well? I'm sorry.
I'm Susan Paschel, and I'm here for the Dental Hygienists Association. And I have with me Suzanne Kuhl, the legislative director. We have a one-page letter that I'll hand out. We also agree with many of the comments that you've made, but we do believe that there should be maybe greater transparency about the board and how it responds to consumer complaints. So that's what our letter proposes. And one idea is to suggest that they report quarterly or whatever would be appropriate to the Health and Human Services Oversight Committee, just reporting on how many complaints they receive in a quarter and how they were resolved. So that's what our letter says, and I'll hand it out. And I'll let Suzanne, who has her own practice in dental hygiene, she has some interesting facts she can provide.
So,
your name again?
Suzanne Kuehl, K-U-E-H-L, and I think my official title is Governmental Affairs Chair of the American, the New Hampshire Dental Hygienists Association. Way too much to say.
I'm going to put down dental hygiene.
Yeah, that's fine. I have a couple of thoughts. When we saw the bill, I completely agree with all the commentary. This is not how you handle a clinical decision. It definitely belongs with the Board of Dental Examiners. But having filed a complaint myself with a dental office that was having an assistant do dental hygiene work, and knowing how that process transpired, I think it's really important. This is why we thought the idea of having just some oversight. When you feel like, and this is what Representative Judy was basically saying, if I bring my complaint, his complaint, to a dental board of peers, you know, maybe it won't get the full attention that it should get, even though I think the dental board works great and I have friends on the board who are fabulous. So they are going to, as long as it's not anonymous, they're going to look into it. So, great. Next thing is, a lot of people don't realize, currently in dentistry, 50% of offices almost, and Mike can maybe speak to this, have gone corporate. And what that means is, even though you're seeing a single dentist name on the door or two, that doesn't mean it's not owned by another entity that is actually focused quite a bit on production. So I think this communication issue that Representative Judy experienced was someone saying, no, you have to do this work before you get your teeth cleaned. That was more of a, I'm going to say, probably was a more of a making money than what clinically Representative Judy needed. And then because getting your teeth cleaned is so important for your gum health, therefore the rest of your body health, I'll just speak to the fact that I actually own my own dental hygiene practice in Kittery, Maine. It's legal in Maine for a dental hygienist to be the point of entry for new patients. And so I certainly invited Representative Judy to come see me if he wanted his deep cleaned, just be a trip. But if if, again, if there was any liability, I have malpractice. I have to call the dental office because I want them to have an exam on top of the cleaning. So it's a matter of the patient following through. But those are just a few points, you know, that I thought would be important to add to this comment. Having oversight would be great, but the conversation should not be legislated. It should be with the Board of Dental Examiners.
Would you envision a scenario where, in fact, someone did come to your independent practice for a prophylaxis and you take a look and say, I'm sorry, I can't responsibly do that?
Well, two things. I'll give you a couple of examples, or three. Three very quick examples. One, I take a blood pressure on every patient to start. And I've had one patient so far in my year and a half of practice where his blood pressure was off the charts, and I said, yeah, we're not doing that today. I need you to have a clean bill of health from an MD, because I feel this is your compromise just being in my chair. So that's one. Number two, love this gentleman, the oldest patient I've ever seen, Harrison, 98 years old, with, I have never seen such old implants in my life. And first thing I saw was an abscess. But he also had a dentist of record. I got right on the phone and I said, Harrison's getting his teeth cleaned here, but he needs a prescription because I see the abscess and he needs to come back in to see you. And then third, Carol, she's fired five dentists. She's just not gonna do what they tell her to do, but she wants her teeth cleaned. And in order to do that, I'm happy to do it, even though I know she needs two teeth pulled. She should have them pulled, but she's not gonna do it. So I'm more interested in keeping her healthy, because that's what haunts me, is if she doesn't keep them clean. So those are some thoughts.
I'll be a little bit more pointed. Are there situations, you've given some examples where you would go ahead, mm-hmm. even though it's kind of, but you mentioned the high blood pressure. Are there other situations? Because this RSA doesn't allow for if, mm-hmm. it just says,
well, I use my clinical. I use my clinical decision making at that point.
But my question to you is: mm-hmm. would there be situations where you would tell a patient, "No, I will not"?
Yes.
Okay, that's what I. It's a binary sort of response, because you mentioned about high blood pressure. So, if that person worked under this,
and pre-medication, they have to be pre-medicated. I mean, all of the clinical standards that we follow are, as a professional, you have clinical standards that are part of your profession. So you have to follow those.
Further question. Use myself as an example with the two total joints. Mm-hmm. And I said, oh, I'm here for my teeth cleaning. Did you take your medication?
If you forgot, then I can't see you.
You reschedule.
Other questions? I'm sorry, did I see a hand?
Yes.
Yeah, please go ahead, Mr. Auerbach.
Yeah, yes, thank you again. And Mike Auerbach, Executive Director of the National Dental Society. One of the concerns, and Ms. Kuhl made the reference to it earlier about business practices. Regardless of the dynamic, most of the Dental Practice Act is imbued with the ADA Code of Professional Ethics and Conduct. This is part of, this is what the Board of Dental Examiners adheres to, and most states adhere to as well. So regardless of the scenario, the dentists are expected to perform within the parameters of that code of ethics, which includes, you know, patient safety. So again, referring Representative Judy back to the board for his personal experience, I think would be the most prudent way to go to deal with his personal issue. But from a legislative standpoint, it is dangerous.
Do you know if that the Dental Society's Code of Ethics is encapsulated in RSA, that this is the standard of care, as it is for the Board of Medicine for physicians? It's codified.
Yes, it's part of the Dental Practice Act.
The latest edition of the American Medical Association Code of Ethics is the standard to which physicians are held.
Yes.
And that's legal.
Yes.
Is it the same for the board?
Yes, it is.
And it's the same for dental hygienists in the same statute.
Okay, so
we have our own code of ethics.
So it is in statute?
Yes.
I didn't put that up. Representative Martin.
Yes, I would like to ask a question, Ms. Pascal, here. And specifically, are you suggesting that what we ought to do is to amend this bill into a replacement bill that would require the Board of Dental Examiners to report quarterly to Health and Human Services you're suggesting that the subcommittee do?
Yes.
Because I think that would be a very reasonable thing for us to do with this bill. And if that's the pleasure, I'm sure we could prepare such an amendment fairly straightforward.
That was my next question. Thank you very much. I set it up well.
You did. Good job. That's what chairman are supposed to do, make somebody else do your work for you.
May I ask a question of Representative Marshall?
By all means.
Are you suggesting that we eliminate a single sentence of the bill entirely and replace it with another sentence that says, the Board of Delaware Standards shall report quarterly as well?
I was asking if we were asked to do that, and yes, the answer to your question is yes.
That would seem to me, Representative, to be a totally new bill.
Our chair would have to rule on that, but I believe it pertains to the same subject matter and would be considered ignored.
I'll have to ask for a point of order from the chair.
Not being totally familiar with the laxity with which I guess who would be the speaker would allow that to occur. I don't know, but it is germane to the topic of getting care provided, and getting care provided does come under the aegis of the Board of Dentistry. So yes, it is a secondary, but I think related, and I think we can sneak it in. From my perspective, we can sneak it in. So I'll let it stand, because I've always higher ups and always say no.
Right.
But if we don't do it, they don't say anything. They don't say anything. So. I'm sorry for the sidebars. Other questions from the committee? Concerns, thoughts? I had my questions answered. Any other comments?
Smile. You look all good and you smile.
Well, I guess on that point I would entertain a motion of some kind. Being chair, I can't. Representative Marsh.
I move that the subcommittee direct someone, and I'll be glad to volunteer, to prepare an amendment in the name of the five representatives present to replace this bill with a bill requiring the Board of Dental Examiners to report quarterly to the Health and Human Services Oversight Committee on the number of consumer complaints received and how they have been addressed.
I'll second his motion.
Discussion.
Good idea.
All right. So, seeing no further discussion, the motion is as mentioned by Representative Marsh, and I won't can't repeat it all.
Prepare a substitute bill.
Well, it's been seconded. That's how we're voting.
Oh, you're voting. Okay. Yes.
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 Yes. Yes. Yes. So I'll just put down 5-0. Okay. So the report will go to the full committee, the National Museum, and we'll have that at the time that the full committee is in session, and we as a subcommittee will present that. That will date is obviously yet to be determined. That will be in the calendar, or you'll be able to get a hold of us individually. We'll have that date as soon as we know it, and you probably will see it as fast as we as well.
Once OLS makes it up, I'll leave you a little to all 5 of us.
Okay, well, thank you for
thank you.
Any other business?
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
10:30.
Well done, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, thank you. Good work. Thank you for
voting. You know what?
Thank you for participating.
Maggie Ray brought up in the March BOD Board of Directors meeting that they should invite Joan Judy. What happened?
I
my understanding was, he's like, why should I, again, without an oversight, if I go see a board of dentals that are probably going to, he said, protect their
why
dental.
Should I take my time?
I mean, I know that they may be.
Oh, okay, because I went to the next month's notes and they made no reference.
And they've also had a change in executive secretary.